care about themselves, that's a non-starter. In sports, the Washington Nationals rallied from behind to win the seventh and deciding game of the World Series last night, beating the Astros 6-2. In the NBA, Boston beat the Bucks 116-105. Cleveland over Chicago 117-111. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. That winter weather advisory in effect until 3, a lakeshore flood advisory until 4, rain and snow with 1 to 3 inches of new daytime accumulation. That's total daytime accumulation, higher amounts away from Lake Michigan, highs ranging from 34 near Lake Michigan to 31 in Walworth County, blustery, winds gusting as high as 35 on Lake Michigan, expecting waves 5 to 8 feet. For tonight, gradual clearing, lows between 19 and 23. Tomorrow, increasing clouds, a high of 38. Right now in Kenosha, light snow and 33. The morning show with Greg Berg is coming up.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a customed career development plan from their first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We are beginning today's program with a conversation about a volunteer group that is called Sleep in Heavenly Peace. And this is a group that on a national scale was organized back in 2012, and a more local chapter was organized more recently. And they have the most laudable of goals, namely to try to help that all children have a comfortable, safe bed in which to sleep. And towards that end, this group of volunteers builds, assembles, delivers well-made bunk beds to households that are in need. And I'm very pleased to be able to speak today with the president of the Kenosha Racine chapter of Sleep in Heavenly Peace, Mike Prudham. And we are talking on the eve of a couple of events that are coming up for the local group, including an open house, as well as what they're calling a public build a little later in November, in which people can really get a firsthand look at what this group does and learn more about why it is so very, very important. Mike Prudham, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it.
I'm glad that we can have this conversation. Let's get a little historical background, first of all. Tell us about the creation of this group, Sleep in Heavenly Peace, back in 2012. What can you tell us about that?
Luke Mickelson in Twin Falls, Idaho, was looking for a project to do to teach his kids how to give back for Christmas.
Huh.
And they decided to build a bed for a person in need. And they built a bunk bed and then looked for a person to give it to. In that process, not only did people say, you know, I could use a bed, but a lot of his friends stepped up and said, boy, I'd love to help if you ever do this again. And so they started doing it on a small scale. And friends of his from different cities joined in and started building beds in their communities. And in 2018 in February, Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs.
Oh, yes, on TV.
He has a show called Returning the Favor on the Internet. And Returning the Favor highlighted Sleep in Heavenly Peace. At that time, there were 13 chapters in 7 states. And after that aired, there were thousands of people who said, I want to build beds. I was one of those. My original thought was myself and my buddy Wayne would build beds in our garage on an occasional basis and distribute them. And I was told that that's really not the way they do it anymore. They do it by chapters because there are so many people that want to get involved that you need to have a chapter structure. And so, much to my chagrin, I became a chapter president. They asked in their initial interview why I wanted to be a chapter president, and I said, I don't. I want to build beds for kids. You're the one who tells me that, you know, we need a chapter president. So, and it has been life-altering.
Wow. So that was back in 2018 then.
2018 is when Racine got involved.
The Racine-Kenosha chapter of Sleep in Heavenly Peace. Very good. So this is one of these things that started very small, in a sense, started very innocently, but it has grown into quite a large organization. Just how large are we talking in terms of the nation?
We have about 190 chapters in 47 states at this point in time.
Wow.
We have been featured on, besides the micro Dirty Jobs where I saw it, we have been involved with CNN as a CNN hero. We have been on NBC Nightly News on a national level. I've been on the TV shows in this area. It's something that people really, really can buy into, helping kids get beds.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like that's a very important sort of hook to this, that whether or not, you know, someone might have, you know, varying opinions or perspectives on some of these social issues, when it comes to an innocent child who finds themselves in this kind of situation of deprivation where they don't have a safe, comfortable bed in which to sleep, it's hard to imagine any decent human being having a problem with trying to do something about that. So tell us then kind of what it felt like to build this local chapter then, and what did you do in order to try to get other people on board to assist you in this effort?
Well, like most people, when you hear about this, you think there can't be that many children that don't have beds. And so my first goal was to find out, was there really a need in this area?
And how serious?
And how serious was it? And I reached out to social service organizations, and I basically asked them, you know, how bad is the problem? And it's I think it's a word we've coined, but bedlessness. How much of a major impact is that? And I was surprised to find out, first, how big of impact it is, and second, on how there was no one filling that niche in this area.
And we should probably clarify, we're not really talking about homelessness.
No.
We're talking about bedlessness. So we're talking about families that have a place to live, but within that small house or small apartment, there might not be decent beds, maybe not beds at all, for children to sleep in.
One of our first deliveries was a family of 6 children. Well, actually 8 children. They needed 6 beds. 2 of them were in cribs. It was a domestic situation where the male partner had destroyed all the furniture. And when we got to the house, there was a stove, a refrigerator, and a crate in the kitchen. And that was the sum total of furniture in the house.
Wow.
And we brought in 6 beds. The kids who were younger, I think the oldest was around 12, all helped us carry the beds in and helped us put them together. And it was just a joy to see their faces when you deliver the beds. Building the beds is fun. Most people can get into the sanding and drilling and actually physically doing the work. But the joy comes in when you see those kids' faces. It's a precious moment when you deliver a bed to a kid.
We're speaking with Mike Prudham about the Racine Kenosha chapter of a volunteer group called Sleep in Heavenly Peace. And this is a group of volunteers that build, assemble, and deliver bunk beds, and pretty high-quality bunk beds to households in need, households where there are not decent beds or enough beds for the children to sleep in. And Mike has been heading up this local chapter of Sleep in Heavenly Peace since the summer of 2018. So let's talk for a moment about the beds. Are we talking basically about the same bunk bed being built over and over again? I mean, is there kind of a strict pattern or format that's followed?
We have jigs, we have taps, we have plans. Each bed looks the same. The variations come with how dark the stain gets over time, but they all are physically the same bed. Single beds and bunk beds are the same bed, with the exception of they're stacked on top of one another. They're made out of dimensional lumber. They're rustic looking. They're not a fine piece of furniture, but they're very stable, very comfortable beds. When we supply them, when we build them, we take the wood and cut it and drill it and sand it. And when we deliver it with a mattress and all the bedding and a pillow and the best wishes for those kids to sleep in heavenly peace.
Wow. How do you make the connection with families that need this?
We have been advertised is a loose word. We have been mentioned in the newspapers. We've been on some TV shows. We have a website. It's called shpbeds.org. There's a button on that website that says request a bed, and people fill out that form, and you can fill it out for yourself. You can fill it out for a relative. We have Kenosha Unified, Racine Unified, St. Vincent de Paul filling out forms for people who they know are in need. So anybody can fill out a form for anyone. You put in the zip code. If it's a zip code we service, it comes to my inbox, and I get a notification that somebody has requested beds. And those people go on my list. The only criteria is they have to be between 3 and 17, and they have to not have a proper bed.
Actually, it's probably important for us to point out that there has been no shortage of people reaching out for your services, and as a matter of fact, you have a considerable waiting list at the moment.
Since we started in June of last year, we've delivered 290 beds. We have over 250 kids on our waiting list right now. So, yeah, there's definitely a need out there.
Right. So how many people are part of your group at the moment? How many volunteers, roughly speaking, are engaged with you in this effort?
My core team is an 8-member board of directors that helped me out in the planning and physical construction. We have had well over 200 individuals that have worked with us.
Wow.
Our biggest group is right around 50 to 60 on one day. We have had people who have volunteered their trucks and stuff to help deliver. We have had, you know, just tons of volunteers. We have a build coming up November 16th. It's what we call our pre-Christmas build. Our goal is to get as many kids into bed by Christmas as possible. Mm. That build day already has 64 volunteers signed up for it.
Wow.
So we will do some building that day. We'll also be doing some delivery that day. We're going to split the people up where they feel most comfortable and, you know, just try to get some of these kids into beds. Right now I have 68 beds ready to be delivered. I have a delivery date this Saturday. I have a delivery date next Wednesday. And we just, as we find people who will help us deliver, we'll set up deliveries.
Wow. So are you hoping for even more volunteers for November 16th? I mean, could you use even more volunteers?
We can use as many volunteers as we get. There's a lot of different work to do. We build at Bain Nelson Construction on 4019 43rd Street. That is where our open house will be as well. But we also store our beds at Kenosha Achievement Center down at 79th and Sheridan. And so there's always work moving things back and forth between the different sites and loading up trucks. And so there's work for as many people as we can get we'll put to work.
Right. And so one does not need to be an accomplished carpenter to be of use to you?
If they needed to be an accomplished carpenter, then I would not qualify.
You wouldn't be the president. It wouldn't be part of this. And of course, I can understand that you have scheduled this public build on November 16th with the goal of trying to get many more children into comfortable beds by Christmas, since this volunteer effort began around the holiday of Christmas and that notion of giving back during the Christmas season.
It's high up on our list. And if you remember where the line "Sleep in Heavenly Peace" came from, it came from Father Joseph Moore's Christmas song, Stille Nacht,
right,
written back in 1816.
Right. And so it's lovely to connect to that particular season. One of the things that attracts me to this whole idea is just that it's a Kenosha Racine chapter. And as somebody who lives in Racine but mostly works in Kenosha, I always applaud any group that gets the good people of Kenosha and Racine working together on something. And is it indeed a group that shares volunteers from both cities?
You'd be surprised. And Burlington and South Milwaukee and Brookfield and Northern Illinois. People love to do this work, and they come to us from all over.
Wow. And I suspect it's probably even a group that crosses certain boundary lines of other in other ways. I mean, maybe people from across the political aisle and probably from different religious traditions can also be part of this effort.
Definitely. We tend to open up, because of my bent, with a prayer. And we've had people who told us they were uncomfortable with that. And so we tell them we're going to pray now. If you don't want to participate, you know, feel free to walk away. No judgment, race, creed, color, age. We've had people in their 70s helping us. We've had people as young as 5 and 6 helping us. They can't run the tools, obviously, but we put each bed together with a 5.5-inch lag bolt. And it takes 8 bolts to put a bed together. And so the kids will take a washer, put it on a bolt, count out 8 of them, and put them in a baggie.
Ah.
So there's work for everybody to do.
Oh, I like that. So explain what's going to be happening at this open house this coming Saturday, and what people will see if they come and attend your open house.
We're going to have all of our stations set up, the drill presses, the saws, the sanders, and all that stuff. But we will not be doing any work. We have found that when you try to talk to people while there are hundreds of pieces of power equipment running, it's very difficult to have a conversation. So we're going to have it there. We're going to be able to talk to people about what the stations do. We're going to have our volunteers there. We may have a bed recipient or two there. To talk about what the program has done for them, what it means for them, why they volunteer. People can ask us questions about how we fund it, how we build the beds, how we find it. Whatever questions you have, we will be there to answer them.
Very good.
My board will be there. We'll have volunteers there. So, you know, there'll be a broad spectrum of ideas. Because it's a plan for Christmas, my wife is baking Christmas cookies. So we'll have some light refreshments and just a chance to chat with people who are interested, who may have not heard of us before, who may not want to commit because they don't know what's happening. So come down, see us, visit us, and find out for yourself.
Sure. And then the public build then is a couple of weeks later on November 16th.
Correct.
And that's something, it sounds like, where you really want people to register that they intend to participate.
We do have a Facebook page. We have an internet website. And in both of those, there are connections to being able to sign up. And we do ask for sign-ups. During the public builds, we actually feed them. We'll have lunch provided. So it always helps to know how many people we're making lunch for. And we've had many volunteers that helped with providing lunch. We've had businesses that have stepped up to help provide lunch. So it's just a very good community building. There's people there who they're like-minded. They want to help kids. And as you said, you know, politically, religiously, racially divergent people, but we're all the same.
Hmm. especially when it comes to something like this.
Yes.
Yeah. It's great to find common ground. Let's finish out by having you maybe share a couple of stories that you remember well in terms of families and children in particular who have been affected by this work. I mean, what comes to mind when you think about the children for whom you have built beds and the families for whom you've made a difference?
One of my favorite stories was a family. They had five children. We put in a couple of bunk beds. When we got there, you could see the air mattresses and the air pumps were off to the side, so there was room for us to set the beds up. We built the beds at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and as our tradition is, we build the beds, we put the mattresses on, we make the beds, they're ready to be slept in. And at 10 o'clock in the morning, the two youngest kids in the family crawled into bed. And I did tell the mother, I said, this is not a normal occurrence. They will again fight for going to bed. But for the next couple of days, you might find it easier to get them there. They were just, and the mother hugged my wife on the delivery. And I mean, they were just, there were tears shed, and it was wonderful. Last Saturday, we delivered beds. And one of the kids was a four-year little boy with a single mother. We brought the bed in, and there were four of us, four men, that went in there to build the bed, and he was just in awe of, you know, power tools and all of that stuff. And so he was, Mom set up a chair for him to watch us, but it was hard to keep him in the chair. We got to the end of it. We had two bolts left to drive in, and we do it with an electric wrench. So one of the guys held the wrench, and the four-year-old boy pushed the trigger. And then he wanted to help some more, so he put the bed slats in. And you know, just the fact that he helped build his bed, you know, that's pride of ownership. That's, you know, and he, again, was in bed at 1 in the afternoon on a Saturday, just having a joyous time being in a bed of his own.
Wow. Very good. It's the kind of thing that is very easy to take for granted, but this is a regrettable reality for a whole lot of people, and probably most of us can't begin to imagine how many people are living in places.
I am totally blown away, and just last night I've got three more requests for beds, five beds in total that came into my mailbox. So
wow.
There's, you know, it's a never-ending need in this area.
How does this get paid for?
You got some money for me? I beg a lot. There are some companies that have stepped up. There are, it's a very grassroots thing. So most of my donations are in the area. I think my average donation is about $300. But lots spread across lots of people. One of our benefactors, a young lady named Emmy J. Livingston, was stillborn on September 24th of this year. Her parents reached out to me. In Emmy's honor, they wanted to raise money, and they wanted to build beds.
Ah.
And they have raised an awful lot of money from their friends in Emmy's honor. And on November 17th, after our public build, we're having a private build for the friends and family to help us build the beds that they funded. And there have been many other stories like that of churches, of companies, of people who have just stepped up and, you know, sent us $25, you know, $10, $15, up to, you know, Thrivent Financial is one of our major monetary sponsors. They sponsored a private build, and I think we built, I think it was 40 beds with them that day.
Wow.
So Lowe's in Kenosha has been a valiant supporter of us. They have given us great pricing on our wood, discounts on the tools that we needed to start with. So it's a true community thing. It's everybody steps up, everybody participates, everybody joins in. It's, you know, many hands make light work is an old saying, but it's so very true that everybody does a little bit, and it just turns out to be something huge and great.
Absolutely. That's great. Approximately how much does it cost to build a bed? Any idea what?
A bed fully equipped and delivered is between $150 and $175. That difference is based on the pricing of, you know, of wood at a certain time, and also on the amount of donations we get in kind. We get a lot of donations of bedding. So Sheets, St. Sebastian Church in Racine is starting a bedding drive for us in November. The chiropractic clinic, Mount Pleasant Chiropractic, did a bedding drive for us. Mertz Medical did a bedding drive for us. So as we, you know, gather the bedding together, that reduces our costs.
Right, because otherwise sometimes you're purchasing bedding and so on.
Correct.
Right. And that's important, too. I mean, that when you are delivering a bed, you are delivering a bed that is fully equipped with mattress and sheets, bedding, so a child can crawl into that bed and sleep.
Correct.
So we want to remind our listeners about these two events that are coming up very soon. First of all, this Saturday, an open house from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. And remind us again of where that is.
That will be at Bain Nelson. The address there is 4019 43rd Street here in Kenosha. They have stepped up from the very beginning to let us use their repair space as our build space. So that's where we do our builds, and that's where we'll have our open house.
Fantastic. Good for them. And then a public build, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. 2 weeks later on Saturday, November 16th at the same place at Bain Nelson. This private build, of course, on November 17th, but that's a private build, not really open to the public.
It's not open to the public. Right. It's just for those folks that are involved with Emmy's family.
Very good. And then if people want more information, how can they reach out to you?
Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, .Prudhom, P-R-U-D-H-O-M, at shpbeds.org. You can also contact me at 262-497-6488. I do have a full-time job, so calling me during the day is less convenient. But anytime after 6 at night, feel free to reach out to me. If you have to call me during the day, we can set up a time. We can talk briefly, but I still have to get some work done.
Of course. And what's the address for your website?
www.shpbeds.org. And there's a find a chapter button, and you can find it by zip code 53405, 53142. Anything in this area will draw you to our chapter.
To the Racine Kenosha chapter.
And we are also on Facebook at SHP Beds Racine Kenosha.
Very good. And SHP, of course, stands for Sleep in Heavenly Peace, which is the name of this volunteer organization with chapters now, you said, in 47 states. So something that began in very modest terms has grown into something really big and truly beautiful. And again, an open house is coming up this Saturday and a public build 2 weeks later. And we hope people who are intrigued by this this lovely undertaking and want to be part of it will attend one or both of those events and otherwise reach out for more information. Mike Prudhom, the president of the Racine Kenosha chapter of Sleep in Heavenly Peace, I so appreciate you joining me today on The Morning Show. What a terrific story. Thank you for sharing it today.
Thank you for having us.
And it's 8:38. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and here is part two. We will be spending this portion of WGTD's Morning Show talking about how we can and indeed must learn to live in the moment and experience the moment. To not get so caught up in a frantic race through life that we end up sort of skimming the surface and not experiencing life in all of its depth and richness. The book at hand is called The Moment, A Practical Guide to Creating a Mindful Life in a Distracted World. And I suspect that this is a book and a message that will speak very directly to many of you, as it certainly speaks to me. The author of the book is Akim Novak, who has written extensively on this topic and has worked with people in all kinds of different situations and settings on this sort of transformative work, which can really make a huge difference. He has been featured on National Public Radio and Fox News and 60 Minutes and so on. He has written a couple of previous books. And again, this newest book, which I'm so glad to be talking about, is published by New Page Books, a division of Career Press, again called The Moment, A Practical Guide to Creating a Mindful Life in a Distracted World. Akeem Novak, we welcome you to the morning show.
It is my pleasure. Hello, Greg.
Glad to be talking to you today. Before we talk specifically about the book, could we get a sense of when this sort of overall topic or concept first became really important to you on a personal level before it became, in a sense, your primary professional pursuit?
My first career was in show business in New York. I was a professional theater director and acting coach. And I know you work with music a lot, so you understand the business. And I was a completely career-obsessed workaholic theater director. My feeling was always, if I don't take the next job, I will never work again. And then at some point, I just felt like I was in my mid-30s, like enough of that life. And I ran off to the small island of Tobago for a year, which is an island of 30,000 people. I windsurfed. I became a good windsurfer. I read a lot of books. And in the end, I realized that's not the life I wanted either. So I went from one end to the other, but I really began to think about how do I want to experience my life? And that's where the journey began.
Mm. I really love the way that this book is laid out. And I also appreciate the fact in which it is surprisingly clear and specific, given the fact that we are talking mm-hmm. about a number of different concepts that one
yes.
can talk about in very vague terms, and sometimes the people who talk about it seem to gravitate consciously to the vaguest terms possible, and throwing around terms that where we end up wondering, what in the world does that really mean? Of course, at the heart of this is something mentioned in the subtitle of the book, mindfulness, living a mindful life. For you, what does that mean?
Two things. One, it means richly savoring, or as richly as we can, savoring every moment that we're in. And the mindful part is being conscious of the drama and the chatter and the story that we have about the moment that we're in. It's impossible to not have some of it going on, but witnessing it and deciding, is this chatter helpful, or is it inhibiting a potentially richer moment?
To you, I thought it was interesting that you share a story about one of your first efforts to, in a sense, combat this notion of rushing
yes.
through life. It was you were in your mid-20s. You had
yes.
read something by somebody whose work you admired and embarked on sort of your own concocted experiment in mindfulness, which involved the stairway of the building where you lived. Tell our listeners about this. It's a great story.
Yes, this was a youthful experiment of mine, and I decided that I wanted to live more fully in every moment. So my experiment was I lived in a four-story walk-up apartment in the DuPont Circle area of Washington, D.C., and I said, let me just walk up as slowly as I can and really experience the physical reality of that walk. And that was a 10-day experiment, and it took me up to 40 minutes to climb the four stairs, and I saw every little crack, every little piece of dirt on the floor, the lighting. And what I learned from that 10 days, the walk up the stairs was just the walk up the stairs. It didn't need to become anything more, and I was trying to turn it into something bigger than what it was. So some moments are simple, are transactional, which is what that was, and other moments have richer layers to it. And I invite our readers and me to really play with the layers a little bit. That particular walk was just a walk. There were not a lot of layers to it. And it was almost liberating to know I can just walk up the darn stairs. And that's fine.
Right. Well, I guess, yes. Well, and I think that's one of the things that makes your book a bit more approachable and accessible than some books that are written in sort of this same general sphere is
yep.
that I appreciate, in a sense, the sort of level-headedness and sense of practicality to which you address some of these issues. Before we get into the four keys that you spell out, I want to take a moment to talk about actually a lovely German phrase that I don't remember hearing before that you talk about. In many respects, this is at the heart of what mindful living is all about. The German term, ein Augenblick. Explain to our listeners what this term literally means and what it means for you, in a sense.
I appreciate how beautifully you pronounced that. Thank you, Greg. That was nice. Ein Augenblick means literally in German, if you translate, it's within the blink of an eye. But Germans tend to say it when, like, wait a minute. If somebody says, couldn't you come over to me? And you say, oh, ein Augenblick. I'll be there in a minute. But the phrase within a blink of an eye is very powerful to me, because within a blink of an eye, I can notice something around me that could change the rest of my life. Within a blink of an eye, that very same stimulus could also disappear and it's gone forever. So within the blink of an eye, everything can happen, but it's our job to notice and then choose about how we want to respond. And that's the joy and also the difficult part about noticing what happens within the blink of an eye.
Mm. We're speaking with Achim Novak about his book, The Moment, A Practical Guide to Creating a Mindful Life in a Distracted World. Towards that end, in order to experience life in a more mindful state, if you will, you spell out four keys that you think can make a very, very critical difference, the first of which speaks very directly to what you were just saying, the importance of awakening our senses. I mean, that is, in a sense, the gateway through which everything comes into our lives or rushes right past us without really, really penetrating. You spell out the beauty of an incredibly simple exercise, which is not even meditation. But it might at a glance look like that. Tell our listeners that simple experiment that could get them started on this path towards the senses being awakened.
And maybe just to create some context, every actor, and I admire actors, actors are trained to live richly and fully in the moment. And one of the first things that every actor does when he or she goes to acting school, they do some exercises to heighten their awareness of the five senses. And this is a simple exercise, and anybody who listens, you can do this on your own. And I love the fact you clarified that this is not meditating, but lie on the floor in a room somewhere, a room you know comfortably. I suggest you lie down for 5 minutes, and if you worry about how quickly 5 minutes go by, just set a timer, close your eyes, and just listen to the sounds around you. And you will be amazed at what you hear. And the aha moment for me is always after 5 minutes, those sounds are there all the time. Like, that's the physical central reality, but we're too busy to notice. And I don't think everything has to be noticed, but how sweet it is to notice some of them and choose whether we want to notice or not. So give yourself those 5 minutes. It's easy to do. Close your eyes, listen, and you'll be amazed at what you hear.
Hmm. It's a really lovely chapter of the book, and you spell out a lot of wonderful suggestions that I think could make a huge difference for people, including what you call the prerequisite of evicting the debris of the past before we can really experience this in its fullness. I want us to talk about the second key, which is about meaning. Your second key is crave meaning. And you actually talk about one of the world's greatest golfers as you begin this discussion.
Well, Jordan Spieth, when I was writing the book, I'm inspired by athletes. I think they do amazing things. I'm inspired by young athletes who achieve great things at an early age. And, you know, Jordan Spieth is one of those amazing golfers who's accomplished great stuff at the age of 20, or I think he's 21 now. But when you win a big title, the meaning of that is actually pretty straightforward. It's a great win. You worked for it. It's a crowning moment. And I quote Jordan Spieth as he talks about winning the Masters in Augusta, Georgia. But meaning, the two ways to look at it. Psychologists often teach us to make meaning of something after an event. We know that we've had a rough year, we've recovered from the year, and then we look back and go, what the heck was that year all about? And we make sense of it afterwards. The kind of meaning that, because this book is called The Moment, that I think is the sweetest is when we discover meaning in the middle of a moment as a moment unfolds. And I reference a Buddhist term called prajna, which really talks about the wisdom. We tend to trivialize it by calling intuition, but it's a deep knowing in the moment. And the best kind of example I can give you, because we've all had this, like we meet somebody in a social setting, and we get wrapped up in a great conversation, and then suddenly the little voice says, wow, I think this will be a friend for life.
Mm.
And that little voice, that's prajna wisdom. And the moment that voice speaks to us, we have a deeper appreciation of the conversation that we're in. And that kind of wisdom actually shows up in many different forms and different ways for different people. But people who are, I call, life connoisseurs really have developed a fine way of sensing more meaning as they're in a moment, and in turn appreciate the moments more fully. So I invite all of us to just discover how prajna talks to you. It's not always a voice. It's very personal, and suddenly it will show up everywhere.
Hmm. I also appreciate it in this chapter, which has quite a few different sections, one called Be a Beatnik, which does not really mean exactly what that that term might mean. You're actually talking about the beets of life, and B-E-A-T-S. We're not talking about the root vegetable. We're talking about, and nor are we talking about beat as in the pulse of music. You're using the term beat in a little different way, which I think is a beautiful illustration of so much of what you're talking about.
Well, our days tend to be broken into, I call them beats, but there's a rhythm and structure to our days. The most obvious structure is the scheduling that we do for meetings and other events. But even within a one-hour meeting with somebody, that can be different stretches, different feelings, different experiences. So one beat changes into the next. And the more we are stay conscious of the structure and the way the beats change, the more we notice the meaning within the beats. Like if we're running all day, life becomes one big blur, and there is no meaning to be discovered. We're just running to get things done. But the moment we stop and settle into what I call the beats or the rhythms of the day, that's when the meaning shows itself. So I invite all of us to be conscious of the beats or rhythms of your day, because within them, that's where we discover the meaning that's there.
The third key is called a wave ride energy. And you must know something about body surfing, because you certainly describe it very, very vividly. And it really offers up some beautiful illustrations, some beautiful metaphors about how this can be explored.
Yeah, I'm a great believer that at the deepest level we experience life energetically, and folks who have an energetic experience of life and can ride the wave, in my experiences, have a richer life. And so we investigate some of the different ways in which we experience energy, but if I want to be very simplistic about it in the book, I think there are the two types of people. There are those folks when a new stimulus, new information comes your way, which is a form of energy, the impulse is to say, well, let me think about it, and I'll get back to you. And there are situations where that level of reflection is a very helpful response. There are other folks who are confronted with a new stimulus or a new wave of energy, and they say, gosh, let me ride the wave, and let me see what happens here. And sometimes the ride isn't pretty, but we can get off the wave, but those folks tend to create a more adventurous and richly lived life. So I explore a little bit in the book all the different ways in which energy talks to us, how we notice it, and how we choose to respond. And I invite folks to take some risks in getting on the energy ride.
Hmm. And finally, your fourth key is that you invite us to make time stand still. First of all, what is the point of making time stand still, to whatever extent that's even possible?
Well, if time really is an artificial construct, right? But folks who meditate know this. Meditation, when we first meditate, is not a lot of fun because we notice all the crap that goes on in our brain, and we're conscious of that, but there are three levels of letting go that tend to happen in meditation. One, we begin to detach from the chatter in the mind. We tend to detach from the urge to get up and run around and do stuff, and we tend to let go of the stress in our bodies, and suddenly we get to that place that meditators I meditate call the state of bliss or peace. And we don't stay there for long. It's a momentary pleasure. But in that moment, we really lose all sense of time, and it's an exquisite experience. And the one benefit of meditating, for example, first thing in the morning, if we reach that state of calm, we're going to get into turbulent waters during the day, but that calm will inform every interaction in the day, and it will change the way we engage with folks. And so that way, it gets us to a deeper, richer experience of the world, because in that moment, we really forget about time.
Right.
We're in a different space.
Go ahead.
The other almost opposite extreme, and this is one of my favorite experiences, is I like the word flow, or the flow experience, which is the experience, and everybody listens to this program has experience when we're so engaged in an activity that we lose all track of time. Like we're doing something for 2 hours and we look at the clock and we go, gosh, I thought I was doing this for 10 minutes. So another invitation for everybody is to find more activities that foster that level of engagement for you, because in the active activities that get us to the flow state, we're so engaged that we lose track of time, and it tends to be a powerful experience for us.
So you see both of these as positives.
I totally do, and they sound like opposites, but they're totally complementary in my mind.
Hmm. One of my favorite moments in this portion of the book is when you write, no matter in which part of your life you slow down, the benefit is always the same, a noticing, a savoring, an appreciation of the subtle, a willingness to be surprised by the ordinary, a richer settling into a moment. Can you say a word about the walks that you take in and around your home just north of Miami?
Yeah, this is where I really call myself on my own crap, if you will. Like I live in Hollywood, Florida, just 30 minutes north of Miami, and I live 6 blocks from a beautiful downtown, and this is a car culture. So I was in the habit of hopping into my car, opening the gate to the alley, driving to the street, driving 6 blocks, and then parking the car somewhere. And I was thinking, wait a minute, you could really just walk downtown. It may sound so obvious, but I had to really, that was a mental switch for me. And as I start walking, you know, I notice more of my neighborhood that I know so well. I notice more of the plants. I see people through windows. You know, I notice a stranger smiling at me as they're walking past me. And I find myself slowing down and savoring the act of getting from my house to a restaurant in downtown. And that sounds so simple, but that's a choice when I'm so used to getting the car to go everywhere. But that's a slowing down as a way of making time stand still a little bit.
Mm. There is so much to enjoy and savor and take to heart in your book called The Moment, A Practical Guide to Creating a Mindful Life in a Distracted World. It is published by New Page Books, a division of the Career Press, and the author, Akeem Novak. Akeem Novak, thank you so much. I am so glad I read your book and so glad I got to talk with you about it. Very best wishes to you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, it is Deborah Karp from the University of Wisconsin Parkside talking about their upcoming nonprofit leadership conference.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from their first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. Our weather forecast calls for rain and snow, 1 to 3 inches of new accumulation. The higher snow amounts away from Lake Michigan. Highs will range.